We're holding on page Chof in Psachim, the paragraph labeled Shum Amud Beis, the middle of Os Mem Dalad. One of the Mishnayos in the Perek, so various Mishnayos in the Perek talk about various cases where you have a suffix as far as what animal, we know that Korban Pesach can be either a sheep or a goat, so you can have various kinds of cases of mix-ups and sfeikas as far as which one it should be. One example it talks about is a person tells his shliach to go shech for him a Korban Pesach, and we're not sure which one he is. So you can have a case where he didn't say anything at all, where then it's completely up to the shliach. You can have a case where he said something and then the shliach himself is not sure. So the Mishnah mentions that there can be a case where the shliach can shech either one he wants, and that's fine, and that'll be for the mishaleach. So the Gemara establishes that that's talking particularly about a king and queen, where since, as Tosfos says, they have all delicacies available to them, they're not particularly makbid, whether it's a sheep or a goat. But a regular person would be makbid, therefore it might not work. So the Gemara brings in that connection a story, which is not here in Ein Yaakov, where one time there was exactly a case like that, involving a king and queen, a Jewish king and queen, and they wound up asking Rav Gamliel, and Rav Gamliel told them the halacha as it is in the Mishnah. So now comes this piece that's an Ein Yaakov, a related point also involving a Jewish king and queen, where Rav Gamliel saved the day. So the story is, Shur Pam Achas Nimtes Halata Beveis HaMitbachayim. One time they found a lizard in the kitchen. So they were preparing a big banquet. A lizard is one of the Shmona Shrotim. When it's dead, it's Metame. Now fine, they could say, big deal, the food is tame. It's not kodshim or truma. It doesn't have to be kept tahor, but people were generally careful to eat full and batara. So if in fact you have a dead sheretz over there, you have a problem. Everybody who was there and all the food is going to be tame. They thought the entire suda is going to be tame because the lizard is dead. So they went and asked the king what to do. Omalahem tells them, go ask the queen, because just like in the previous story where the king defers to the queen, he realizes she's smarter than him and she'll have a better idea what to do. So they went and asked Rav Gamliel. So she tells them, go ask Rav Gamliel. So Rav Gamliel asked them, this kitchen, this Beis HaMitbachayim really means more of the shlachtos, whatever. This area where they were preparing the food, was it hot or cold? So in other words, did they find the lizard in hot water or in cold? So they told him we found it in a hot area, in hot water. He tells them, go pour a cup of cold water on it. So sure enough, they poured a cup of cold water on it, and it moved around. So, therefore, it's not Matame. A Lata and all the Shemona Shrotim are only Matame when they're dead. So, in other words, Rav Gamliel realized that the animal had been stunned by the heat, and that's why it looked dead, but really, in fact, that's why pouring cold water on it made it wake up from that state of shock. So Rav Gamliel told them it's fine. The whole soda is Torah. There was no source of Torah over here because a live sheretz is not Matame. Nimsa Melech Toler. So it comes out the king has to depend on the queen, and the queen in turn has to depend on Rav Gamliel to tell him what to do. So it comes out that entire banquet is all dependent on Rav Gamliel being able to fix up the situation. Abodina points out that, you know, you have the expression in the Gemara, Man Malchi Rabbanon, who are the real kings, the Chachamim. Here we see a real live example of it, where if it hadn't been for Rav Gamliel, the king of Torah, then the human, the regular, the political king and queen would have been in a heap of trouble. Doesn't say who the king was, no. So if we're talking of Gamliel Hazokin, then it may have been Agrippa Samela. So he's pretty much the, so you had, in his time, so in Gamliel Hazokin's time, you had like this. The majority of Eretz Yisrael was being ruled over by Roman governors at that point. But nevertheless, you still had different sons and grandsons and nephews and whatnot of Hudus that were ruling over different parts of Eretz Yisrael. Conceivably, it could have been one of them. Eventually, what happened was you had the late in Rav Gamliel's lifetime, Agrippas, the famous Agrippas HaMelech that we find in a number of places in Shas, was appointed king, and so it could be referring to him. If the other possibility is Rav Gamliel the Yavne, who was around shortly before the Churban, in which case the original Agrippas had a son also named Agrippas, so it might have been him, or again, it might have been one of his uncles or cousins or whatever, who were ruling over bits and pieces of Eretz Yisrael. Misha Hayatome Perakchi. So the main topic of this parak is Pesach Sheni. So one of the things is we know the Torah tells us that a person brings a parak Pesach Sheni if he was Tomei or Bederech Rechoika. So we have to define what's a Derech Rechoika for that purpose. So the Mishnah explains if a person is any place from Medin and further away than that from Yerushalayim. So how far is Medin? So the Gemara starts by saying that now, like this, in a number of places in Shas, it says the idea that a person can walk 10 parasa a day. Now, Korban Pesach can be shechted beginning, in principle, you could shecht it beginning from noon and onward. In practice, earlier in the Masechta, it talks about the earliest they ever shechted it was half an hour after Chatzos, because that would be when Erev Pesach comes out on Erev Shabbos. They need to allow as much time as possible because people need to roast the Korban Pesach before Shabbos. But nevertheless, even then, they wouldn't do it earlier than half an hour because the Gemara explains elsewhere the walls of the Bais Mikdash weren't exactly perpendicular. They were wider on the bottom and narrowed towards the top. You can see that nowadays when you visit the Kotel. If you look down through some of those windows in the floor over there, you can see how it sticks out as it goes further down. So therefore, you wouldn't notice a shadow on them immediately at Chatzos. You'd have to wait a half hour before you start noticing a noticeable shadow from the sun moving. Anyway, but in principle, Midoraisa, you would be allowed to shecht at any time from Chatzos and onward. The deadline is Shkia. So if you have that a person is far away enough where even if he started walking at Chatzos, he wouldn't reach Yerushalayim by Shkia, then we consider he's on the Derech L'Choika, and then he's potter from Pesach Rishon, and he gets pushed off to Pesach Sheni. So the Gemara starts discussing the point, and brings from that Ula starts by saying, before we have this piece in Ein Yaakov over here, that a person can walk, that a person can walk 15 mil from Chatzos until Shkia. So according to him, then it comes out, then the breakdown of the 40 mil per day comes out 5 mil from Aloysa Shachar until Netzachama, 15 from Netzachama until Chatzos, another 15 from Chatzos until Shkia, and another 5 from Shkia to Tesach HaFodim. So in this connection, the Gemara mentions, Me Aloysa Shachar, Va'ada Netzachama, Chamisha Milim. From Aloysa Shachar until Netzachama, that the average person could walk 5 mil. Menolon mi Loit. Where do we know that from? From the story of Loit. Dichtiv, Chamoya Shachar Olav Ayyitzu Vagomer. The Pasuk says, as dawn was breaking, then the Malachim are telling Loit and his family, you better hurry up and get out of the city. Then it says the sun came out, meaning it was Netzachama, it was sunrise, and Loit arrived at Soyar. So therefore, from Sdoim to Soyar is the amount of time that it would take from Aloysa Shachar until Netzachama. How long is that? So Rav Chanina says, I personally saw that area, and it was 5 mil distance from Sdoim to Soyar. Therefore, we see that a person can walk 5 mil in that amount of time, from Aloysa Shachar until Tseis, from Aloysa Shachar until Hanetzachama. Later on, the Gemara is going to point out, actually, that by Yoitzu Shaini, the Gemara is going to point out further on, we're going to say that's different. The Malachim were rushing them, therefore, maybe a normal person would not be able to walk that fast, that far, but here, since the Malachim were hurrying them up, then they walked the extra distance. Marsha brings also from a Yerushalmi that says that the Malachim were Makadrin Bahorim. They were piercing through the mountains, meaning, in other words, they were sort of flattening out the mountains. In Erevin, the Gemara talks about a concept when you're measuring Tchumen, sometimes you have a very steep hill, you don't actually measure the ground surface of the hill, which would come out longer. Instead, what you do is the actual end of the Tchum is going to be closer up then. Rather, what you do is you imagine as though you're piercing through the mountain. You do a certain kind of measurement where you're essentially measuring the base of the mountain rather than the slope of it, and here here it would be a similar kind of thing. So the Chachamim figured out, or Chanino, whoever it is, figured out that the topography over there is such that if it were to be flat, if you were to take all those mountains and flatten them out over there, you'd get a distance of 4 mil, because in fact it's hilly, and whatever, therefore you have an extra mil. So that's where we get 5 mil. So now the Gemara continues after it discusses a little more about some dinim in this regard. The Gemara says, Omar Rabba, Shis Alfi Parsi Hava Alma. The world is 6,000 parsa. Now, Since this is in context of this discussion of how long, how far a person can walk from during the different times of the day, so in context, Rava has to be talking about, Rashi explains, he's talking about how far does the sun travel in a day. Given that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and at least on the face of it, the earth looks flat to us, so therefore the distance it traverses from when it rises to when it sets in a given area is, Rava says, 6,000 parsa. Now, there is an enormous amount of discussion on this Gemara and the next few pieces that we're gonna have over here, how exactly we understand them based on later understandings of how what the earth is, of what the earth looks like, and what space looks like, and the positions of the sun, and so on and so forth. Among the answers is that, so in fact, the Maharal talks about, first of all, he says many of these Gemaras, even though on the surface of it, they are talking about as if the earth was flat. Many of them can be understood if the earth, in connection with a spherical earth as well, so that would fit more with what we're familiar with. With that said, though, he says this particular thing of 6,000 parasa is not necessarily meant to be a physical description. He says a number of these descriptions that we have in this Gemara and other similar ones are not necessarily meant to be physical ones, but rather they represent a more of a ruchniistic reality behind the physical one. So he says six represents the physicality because you have six cardinal directions, like when we wave rule of an Esrog in six directions. 1,000 represents a certain level of completion, 10 times 10 times 10. So therefore, Rava's 6,000 parasa is not necessarily referring to a physical measurement on Earth, but rather an ideological thing of you can say that the world takes up that amount of space in roughness. Nevertheless, the Gemara is going to treat it as though it was an actual physical quantity and ask questions on it. Anyway, the point, so Rava says, the world is 6,000 parsa. The sumcha, the rakia, and the thickness of the rakia, alfit parsi, is 1,000 parsa. The idea is, in other words, the way the Gemara is picturing sunrise and sunset is the sun comes, you have the vault of the sky, which is like an arch like a dome over the earth. The sun is coming sort of from the outside of it and coming through the thickness of it, and therefore it's getting progressively lighter until it comes to the inside of that dome, and then it shines, and therefore you see the full sunlight. Then it traverses around to the other side of it, and then it goes through the other end, it goes through, and that's why it's getting progressively darker. So Rava is calling that sumcha de rakia, the thickness of the rakia. In modern terms, you could say it means, in other words, like the thickness of the atmosphere as the sun's rays are passing through it more and more and getting dimmer and dimmer until it sinks below the horizon. Anyway, so these two figures that Rava is saying, Chada Gemara v'chada Svara. So he has two figures. One that the world is 6,000 parsa, which means, in other words, the distance the sun traverses from east to west is 6,000 parsa. And the other one, he's saying the thickness of the rakia is 1,000 parsa. So chode gemara v'chode svara. One of these two things he learned from his rebbeim, and the other one he learned by svara. So where does he get, what's the svara? So the 6,000 he learned from his rebbeim. Rashi, by the way, gives another explanation. Rashi's second explanation is 6,000 parasa means that the world, that the globe is 6,000 parasa in length or in width. So Rashi says that it doesn't really fit though. The sun goes around the earth. It doesn't really go from one end to the other. So you can't really talk about you can't really talk about 6,000 parasa being the size of the earth. We must mean more the size of the distance the sun traverses from sunrise to sunset. With that said, the Rambam does understand it more like that explanation that Rashi rejects. And really, I mean, you have different opinions what a parasa is. Different opinions among posts can make a parasa anywhere between about 2.5 and 3 miles. So of course, if you say that it means the actual size of the earth, 6,000 parasa at the smaller measure would come to around 15,000 miles. According to the larger measure, it would come to 18,000 miles. That's not quite the full circumference of the earth. The earth is around 24,000 miles in circumference. Maybe you could say, though, that it means, for example, the latitude of Eretz Yisrael, where after all, it's a smaller circle, then maybe you could talk about one of these figures. Anyway. So the fact that it's 6,000 parasa that he gets from Gemara, that he learned from his Rebbeim, as far as the idea that the thickness of the Rakia is 1,000, that he gets as follows. He figures on the basis of what Rabbi Baba Chana says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Udiyu in the Sugya, which is not here in Ein Yaakov, Kama Malach Ha'odim Beinini Bayoim Yud Parasos. A person, the average person, can walk 10 parasa, a parasa being 4 mil, then that equals 40 mil. And breaking it down, from Alois Hashacha until Netzachama, he can walk 5 mil, like we said before, because it's 5 mil from Sidonim to Tzoyar. Similarly, from Shkia to Tzeis, which is an equivalent amount of time, is another 5 mil. So it comes out, says Rava, if you put all the figures together, then the Ovye Shel Rakia must be 1/6 of the total length of the day. Meaning, in other words, if the idea is, if you can walk 30 mil from Netz until Shkia, which is to say, from when the sun appears inside that vault until it starts disappearing from it, you can walk 30 parasa during that time, and meanwhile, during that time, the sun is traversing 6,000 parasa during that time. Well then, during a time, so now, if between Alois and Netz, you can cover another 5 parasa, and from Shkia until Tseis, another 5, that's the time, again, when the sun is, so to speak, passing through the thickness of the heavens on its way to wherever it goes at night, then that must be 1/6, 5 into 30, is 5 into 30, goes 6 times, therefore it must be 1/6. If the distance the sun traverses during the daytime is 6,000 parasa, then dividing 6,000 by 6 gives you 1,000. Therefore, the thickness of the rakia on each side must be 1,000 parasa. So that's Rava's Svara, where he figures that out. But the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction against that. A Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda says that the thickness of the rakia is only 1/10 of the length of the day, rather than one sixth, to be exact, Rashi says, we are dealing with different fractions over here because Rava is talking about relative to the time from Netz to Shkia. And relative to that, he's saying the Oyvish Rakia, the length of twilight until Netz, and the length of twilight after Shkia is 1/6 of that. Rabbi Yehuda is using a different number for the denominator. He's using the total 40 mil that a person can walk from Alois until Tzeis. And he's saying that Oyvi Rakia is 1/10 of that, namely he's making it 4 mil rather than 5. Teda, he says, you can figure it out. How much can the average person walk in a day? 10 parasa, which is 40 mil. And Rabbi Yehuda says, from Alois until Netz is 4 mil. And from Shkia until Tseis is another 4 mil. So it comes out of the total 40 mil that a person can walk from Alois Hashachar until Tseis Hachavim, 1/10 of that is during the twilight before Netzachama, and 1/10 of that is during the twilight after Shkia. Tiyupta de Rava, Tiyupta de Ula. So this is a contradiction on Rava, who said that it was 5, and it's also a contradiction on Ula, who said that it was 5. So the Gemara says, Tiyupta, you're right. In that case, it's a contradiction. The question then is, Lema Tebe, Tiyupta de Rav Yochanan. In that case, would we also have to say that we've contradicted Rabbi Yochanan because Rabbi Baba Chana had quoted Rabbi Yochanan as saying that a person can walk 10 parasa in a day and 5 of them are before Netzachama and 5 of them are after Shkia. So at this point, the Gemara is assuming that that statement of Rabbi Baba Chana is a verbatim statement from Rabbi Yochanan. In that case, if we've slogged up Rava and Ula based on this Braisa where Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's 4 rather than 5, then we'd slog up Rabbi Yochanan also, because he's also saying 5. But Omalach, but Rabbi Yochanan can tell you, not necessarily. All I said was that in a day, a person can walk 10 parasa, which is 40 mil. I didn't specify how much of it is at different times of the day. The Rabbanan who dekato, the Chachamim, Ula and Rava, when they're taking what I said and deducing from it how long is before Netz and how long is after Shkia, they made a mistake. The Kachashvi, the Kadma of Chashofa, they're miscalculating how long it is because, in other words, Rashi says, It is true, many people can walk 5 mil before Netzach Hamah, but the reason is because they don't necessarily start out at Alois. They want to get an early start, so they start a little bit before Alois HaShachar. So yeah, therefore, they're able to make 5 mil on the same thing. They don't necessarily turn in as soon as it comes to Tetzach Kachavim. They try to go a little past Tetzach Kachavim until they can't see anymore. So therefore, they manage to traverse 5. But if you were to consider, Rabbi Yochanan would say, the actual times of Alois HaShachar and the actual times of Tetzach Kachavim, then you would really have, like Rabbi Yehuda says, that it's only 4 mil. And the Gemara says, Le Matev Kyuvta Dirab Chanina. Would we have to say that also then we have with this 4 versus 5 mil, we're contradicting Rabbi Chanina, because Rabbi Chanina before said that he saw the distance from Sdoim to Tsoyar and it was 5 mil, and there it makes it clear in the Pasuk that Alois HaShachar is when the Malachim got them out of there, and Netzach Hamah is when he arrived in Tsoyar. The Gemara says, like, by Yitzu Shiny, no, because it's different when they're rushing, then they can make five mil in a time when most people would make only 4. So that's not a contradiction against him. So this Gemara, by the way, first of all, Tosfos points out over here, printed in the Gemara, that you have a whole question that here you have the Gemara is implying there are 4 or 5 mil, according to the different opinions, between Alois HaShachar and Netzach Hamah, and between Shkia and Tzeis HaKachavim. Meanwhile, you have a Gemara in Shabbos that implies that the time from Shkia until Tzeis is much shorter than that. The Gemara talks over there about time that it takes to walk 0.5 mil, or 2/3 of a mil, or 3/4 of a mil. There's different opinions of Tanoim over there. Nothing like the 4 or 5 mil we're talking about over here. So you have two famous answers to that. You have the Shitta of the Ge'onim, which is that there are two kinds of Tzeis HaKachavim. You have Tzeis HaKachavim in Halacha, when 3 stars come out, and then you have Tzeis HaKachavim as when the sky is full of all the stars that you're going to see in the nighttime. So here, the Gemara is talking about the second kind. There in Gemara Shabbos, it's talking about the first kind. Then you have the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, who holds the other way around, who he holds that there's actually two kinds of Shkia. You have the Shkia as when the actual globe of the sun sets below the horizon, but then you still have light of it in the sky for a considerable amount of time. Rabbi Natan holds only when that light disappears, only then is considered Shkia. And then from then, until Tzeis HaKachavim, is a fairly short amount of time, 0.5 or 3/4 or whatever of a mil. So because of that, you have the famous two opinions of the Ge'onim and of Rabbi Natan. This is why you have when it comes to, so back in the old country, there were actually Kehillahs where they followed Rabbi Natan even as far as the beginning of Shabbos. So they would start Shabbos. So you look on our calendars nowadays, you see what time Lichtenstein is. In places like that, they would be lighting candles much later than that, close to an hour afterwards. The Alter Rebbe says in Seder Achnasas Shabbos, don't even think to rely on that, even though the Mechaber mentions in one point like that, but he changed his mind. And the Alter Rebbe goes and shows astronomically how it's impossible to say like Rabbeinu Tam's Shita. Nevertheless, there were Kehillahs in Europe that did that. Here and in their successor Kehillahs and in the United States and Eretz Yisrael and everywhere else, I don't know of anybody who begins Shabbos like Rabbeinu Tam, but you have Kehillahs, Adei Yamazeh. You go to Williamsburg, for example, where they end Shabbos like Rabbeinu Tam, and therefore they end it considerably later than we do. Within this Gemara, also, you have the Nafka Minna of how do you calculate, based on this Gemara, the length of the time it takes to walk a mil, which is Negeah, as far as various halachas. For example, as far as how long does it take for dough to become chametz, earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara talks about it, the time it takes to walk a mil. Well, how long does it take to walk a mil? Based on the figures we're giving in the Gemara over here, you wind up among the Rishonim with 3 different possibilities. One way of saying is, if you can walk 30 mil in 12 hours from Netzach Hamah until Shkia, which is approximately in your Shalayim Pesach time, is approximately 12 hours, then it comes out that you're taking 24 miles to walk a mil. So that's one opinion. Another way of looking at it is we're saying Rabbi Yehuda says that no, during that time, you can go not 30 mil, but 32 mil, because according to him, you have 4 before Netzach Hamah, 32 from Alois HaShachar until Netzach Hamah until Shkia, and another 4 from Shkia until Tzeis HaKachavim. So then it comes out you've got 32 mil in 12 hours. Calculating it, then you come with 22.5 minutes per mil. That's a second opinion. And then you have another way of looking at it is the Rambam's way is that when we say B'chlal, he has a whole different understanding of the sugya over here. He understands that when we say a person can walk 40 mil in a day, it means from Alois HaShachar until Tzeis, it means for the entire time from Alois Shachal to Tzeis HaKochavim, including the full meal, or including the full meal that we're talking about over here. In that case, that was the first way. He said, he understands that the 40 meal is from Netzach Hamah until Shkia. Aside from that, on top of that, then you can have 4 or 5, as the various opinions are saying, before Shkia, before Netzach Hamah and after Shkia. In that case, if you can walk 40 mil in 12 hours, then it comes out 18 minutes to a meal. And that's why when we're familiar, for example, with 18 minutes, as far as the matzah bakeries, that's based on the Rambam's Shitta. You would have other Rishonim who would say you would have 22 and a half minutes or you'd have 24 minutes before it becomes chametz. So that's the thing. So the Alter Rebbe is talking about that the Alter Rebbe disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam, and he brings from the Gaonim and from No, so the Alter Rebbe is talking about there's something else. It is true, once the sun sets, that you have you can still see the rays of the sun at the tops of trees and at the top of tall buildings and things like that. And so the Alter Rebbe talks about that, you have that 4 minute difference until that disappears. So la halacha, then, in other words, you're saying that once the sun sets below the horizon, then you have to consider it shkia, but you have that sort of 4 minute leeway, the Alter Rebbe is saying. What? We don't in practice use that leeway. I mean, basically, the Alter Rebbe is saying is once the sun. If a baby is born during that time, then you have a suffix as far as Mila and whatever. Yeah. What? Yeah. So, but no. Right. Right. But yeah. Right. Yeah. But the Alter Rebbe goes on to say there at the end of Seder Achnasas Shabbos, absolutely don't think to rely on Rabbeinu Tam's Shitta that you have almost an hour after Shkia. It's still considered daytime because even though Rabbeinu Tam says that, but he's contradicted by the Gaonim, and the Alter Rebbe says he's contradicted by Chush, by the Metzius, and the Beis Yosef himself changed his mind and wrote differently in Hilchos Shabbos and then changed his mind in Hilchos Mila, and ever since the Alter Rebbe's time, there's been a great amount of ink spilled on this whole topic. So, Onward, the Gemara says, even though we've already slugged up Rava's figures, we slugged up Rava's Ovi Rakia being 1,000 parasa. Now the Gemara is going to attempt to slug up also Rava's statement that the world is 6,000 parasa, which again, we understood, Rashi had understood that to mean that it means that the distance that the sun traverses from when it rises until it sets, going across the earth, is 6,000 parasa. So the Gemara says, Toshma, Mitzrayim tof parasa al tof parasa. The country of Mitzrayim is 400 by 400 parasa, which would be around 900 or 1,000 miles or so. That's a lot larger than the country of Egypt nowadays. The Pashtos, it also includes areas of adjacent countries that were under Egyptian rulership, whatever. Mitzrayim echa misamach b'kush. Mitzrayim, in turn, is 1/60th of Kush. Kush usually means Ethiopia. Here it might mean the entire Africa, or who knows, it might even mean the entire southern hemisphere, I don't know. Anyway, the Kush Echem Misamach Ba'olam, that in turn is 1/60th of the entire world. Ba'olam Echem Misamach Ba'gan, the entire world, the entire globe, is 1/60th of the Gan Echem Misamach Ba'eden, which in turn is 1/60th of Eden. The Gemara mentions in a few places, Gan and Eden are not the same thing, because after all, the Pasuk says that Hashem planted Gan Be'eden, implying there's a place called Eden, and within it is the garden. So now the Gemara is saying it's only 1/60th of it. In Kabbalah, the terminology, it's Gan Eden Atachten and Gan Eden Elyon. So Gan Eden Atachten is 1/60th the size of Gan Eden Elyon. 1/60th is often doesn't mean Davka is exactly a 60th, but it means, in other words, it's like a minute part of it. The Eden Echad is Samach the Gehenim, and in turn, Eden is 1/60th the size of Gehenim, which Ion Yaakov points out. What that means is, therefore, all the Averis and everything can be Botel and Gehenim, and that way they can become Tahar. You Mavatel them Echad B'Shishim. So Nimsa Kola Olam Kula Kikisik Deir LaGehenim. So it comes out that the entire world is only like a pot lid relative to Gehenim. If you think of like the volume that a pot lid can hold versus the volume that the pot as a whole can hold, it's a very tiny thing. So therefore, so that shows, in other words, given the figures that we're saying, If Mitzrayim is 400 parasa by 400 parasa, 160,000 square parasa, and multiply that by 60 to get the size of Kush, and multiply that again by 60 to get the size of the Olam, that's a lot more than 6,000 parasa. So Tufta, so that's a contradiction against the Rava's 6,000, against the Rava's figure of 6,000. With that said, though, first of all, again, you know, I mentioned before, the Maharal says that Rava's 6,000 may not be an actual physical concept. He's talking more metaphorically about what the earth represents in terms of being as complete as Hashem made it, as having the completion of all six directions. But there is also, there's an interesting explanation. Sam Sofer says, maybe we can justify both things. Across the world, or the circumference of the world, or whatever might be of the globe, might be 6,000 parasa, but given that it's a globe, that means you can go round and round and round, starting from one pole and looping around, like to go and visit, if you want to go visit, let's say every line of latitude, you're going to be circling around the globe an awful lot, and then if you figure all that, then it could come to the figure that the Gemara says over here by multiplying the Mitzrayim by 60 and Kush by 60. Okay. Toshma, let's bring another proof against the other. The ton of Dvei Eliyahu. We learn in a Braisa from the Yeshiva of Eliyahu. There's an explanation from the Be'er Sheva, one of the early Achronim, who says that this Eliyahu was actually a Tana of that name who put together a collection of Braises. Others say that it means Eliyahu Anovi. There's a Gemara in Ksubas that mentions Eliyahu Anovi teaching one of the Chachamim, Rab Onan, and the Gemara calls it over there what he taught Rab Onan, Seder Eliyahu Rabba and Seder Eliyahu Zutta. We do in fact have Tana Dvei Eliyahu Rabba and Tana Dvei Eliyahu Zutta, so it might be the same thing, or it might be not. Anyway, this Braita says, Rav Nosson Omer, Kola Yishuv Kuloi Tachas Koichav Echadu Omer, the entire settled area of the world, meaning not counting the ocean, not counting the deserts and whatnot, just the area where people, just the habitable portion of the globe, is all under one star. Meaning, in other words, it's smaller than the size of one star. Even though, you know, the stars seem very small to us, but in reality, each one of them is much bigger than the world. With that said, Tosfos at the end of the Masechta talks about there might be a difference in that regard between the stars of the 12 mazolos and the various other stars that are scattered around the sky. Because later on, at the end of the Masechta, when it talks about how the stars fought from Shemayim and defeated Sisera, and it talks about how they came down to earth and heated up the mud over there, and therefore Sisera's army, they went to the river to bathe and they got swept away. So that would imply the stars can actually fit on earth with, you were saying, each one is bigger than the earth. So Tosfos draws a distinction between the stars in different parts of the heavens. Could also be, I mean, you know, in Lashon Kodesh, the word Koichov also can mean a planet as well as a star. So you could say maybe Tosfos' distinction is talking about the stars versus the planets. Some of the planets are about the size of Earth. Some of them are smaller. Some of them are larger, but many of them are in fact smaller, or at least the same size, whereas the actual stars are generally understood to be considerably larger. Anyway. Teda, so Rav Nosson says, you can prove this. A person, for example, looks at a certain star, and if he travels eastward, he's still going to see that star overhead. No matter which direction he goes, he's always going to see that star overhead. So you see from that the entire world, the entire settled area of the world is all under one star. Now, Rashi points out, given that one star alone is the size of the entire settled area of the world, and we know that settled area is wider than 1,000 parasa. 1,000 parasa, based on the figures we said before, would be about 2,500 to 3,000 miles. Even, okay, you know, back then nobody knew of the Western Hemisphere or the Americas, but even just Europe and Asia and Africa, the parts that they were familiar with, is a lot wider than 1,000 parasa. And the fact is, of course, Rashi says there are a lot more than 6,000 stars in the sky. So therefore, just with six stars, you have covered 6,000 parasa, and there's a lot more than six stars visible in the sky. That also shows, therefore, and all of those stars, again, are visible pretty much no matter where, whether you go east or west or whichever direction you go in. Now it is true, by the way, And it's true, Mephoshim points out, I mean, there are the Maharal points out in Be'er HaGoyla, for example, that it's true, there are some stars where as you go further north or further south, you're not going to see them. You're not going to see, for example, you're not going to see the pole star if you go south of the equator. But overall, many of the stars that you see in the sky, you're going to see no matter how far east or west or north or south you go. So not because the star is small, right? It's because the Maharal makes a point, because after all, the earth is curved, so therefore it curves away from them, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so again, so we see that the entire world is under the size of one star, so that's another proof against Rava, who said the whole world is only 6,000 parasa, because based on that, it comes out the world must be tens of thousands of parasa in size, in order to, not tens of thousands, maybe, but whatever, if you have, in ancient times, they knew of about 1,000 visible stars in the sky. There's some kind of gematria in connection with that, but I don't remember what it is. But anyway, so if each one is the size of the entire yishuv, then you're talking about the world as a whole, including, once you include all the seas and deserts and all the other uninhabitable areas, has to be a lot larger than that. Tosfos points out there's a different medrash that says that the world is made up of three parts. You have one third of it is water, one third is desert, and one third is habitable area. Then that doesn't fit with our Gemara over here, because then it would come out based on this there'd only be three stars, because if the habitable area is all under one star, then you'd have one for that, one for the seas, one for the deserts, and you have a lot more stars than that. Okay, in any case, the Gemara says, Tzivta, this is another contradiction against the Rava, who said that the entire world is 6,000 parasa, because it comes out based on what we're saying over here, the world has to be a lot larger than that. So again, it is a funny calculation, and again, the Maharal is thinking that since the star from this distance, that means it's So the Maharal has an entire section of a Sefer Be'er HaGoyla. The Maharal wrote the Sefer Be'er HaGoyla. In his times, there was a Yid living in Italy by the name of Rabbi Azariah min HaDoimim. This Rabbi Azariah wrote a book, I forget the name of it, where essentially he argued that, you know what, now that we're a lot more advanced in science and other things, he's living in the 1500s, then we can see that there were various things. The Chachamim said, you know, okay, they were working with the science of the their times, Lav Dafka, it's so correct, v'chola. The Maharal didn't like that at all, so he wrote this entire Sefer to refute that, and he has one whole section of his Sefer where he deals with these various astronomical things, like this Gemara over here, and explains them. Some of them he explains, you can actually explain them with the astronomy that we know now. Some of them he says, like we said before, about the 6,000 parasa, that they're not necessarily meant to represent a physical reality, but rather we're talking about metaphorically, the earth, again, since the earth has six cardinal directions, like with the directions that we wave the Dalet Minim, and it's multiplied by 1,000 representing Shleimus, so it represents that the Eivishta created the world and all of its resources with a Shleimus to them. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring another proof against the other. A Braisa says, Egla bat Sofen ba'akra ba'dorin. Egla, which is a constellation, Rashi translated, Egla means a calf, so Rashi explains it's Mazel Shur, the Mazel, which is mainly visible when the sun rises during Eo time. So that's in the north. The Akrav Badorim, and the Mazel called Akrav is in the south, that's the Mazel of Cheshvan. Although Tosfos says maybe not necessarily the Egla and Akrav that we're talking about over here are not necessarily the constellations of those names on the Galgal Mazalis, rather he says they may be other groups of stars, because the ones that we're talking about over here on the Galgal Mazalis, on the zodiac, are taken not always in the north or south. They circle around, as Gemara is going to talk about later, as we'll learn more tomorrow, Bez Hashem. So Tosfos says they may be other ones. Yesh Oimrim, in fact, that the word Egla over here is not Egla, but rather Agola, which would mean the wagon. In that case, it would mean the Big Dipper or the Little Dipper, which both resemble wagons, and both of them are in the north. In that case, Akrav would be some other constellation or some other individual group of stars or whatever that's more in the south. Anyway, v'chola yishuv kule eni yoshiv elabein egla la'akrav. The whole settled area of the world is somewhere between egla and akrav. V'chola yishuv kule eni el shah achas b'yoyim, and the entire habitable area of the world is only the equivalent of 1 hour of the sun's motion during the day. Shein chamin nichnas l'yishuv el shah achas b'yoyim. The sun is only overhead in the settled areas of the world 1 hour of the day. Teida, you can see that, the Braisa says, shavachomish chamav mizrach, 5 hours into the day, the sun is on the east. 7 hours into the day, it's in the west. Only in the middle of the sixth hour, in the middle of the seventh, is it overhead, meaning that then it's directly overhead. Otherwise, it's over some other area. So this is also Tiyukta. This is another contradiction on Rava, where Rava was saying, in effect, that the deserts and the seas and whatnot are so much larger than the settled, it comes out, in other words, from this Braisa, that 11/12 of the world is the uninhabitable area. Only 1/12, the equivalent of one time zone, is the settled area, and that would be again, that doesn't fit with what Robert was saying, that the whole path of the sun every day is 6,000 parasa. Here also the Maharal has an explanation, although I couldn't really quite follow it, who explains, and we don't mean literally, I mean the fact is you have noon is different times in different places in the world, but in each individual place in the world you have to have noon, local noon is only for a short amount of time, so therefore in that sense we can say that each of those areas makes up of only a very small fraction of the world. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Yitzayin Tishrei. During Chagas Sukkos, we find a lot of emphasis on the idea of Simcha. In general, every Yom Tov is a Simcha, and Chagas Sukkos is specifically called Zman Simcha Seini. Then on Sukkos, we have also the greater Simcha of Simchas Beis Hasheva, where in the Bis Mikdash, they're drawing water for the Nisach HaMayim, and they did that with Simcha, Shat HaMayim, Sos HaMayim, Yashua, and they did it with tremendous Simcha, where Chazal say, Mish Leira Simchas Beis Hasheva, Leira Simcha Miyamav, anybody who never saw that, never saw a real Simcha. And that I've talked about many times, even nowadays, we have no Bais Mikdash, we make a Simchas Beis Hasheva. In fact, in some ways, it begins with a full shturim already from the first night of Sukkos, as opposed to in the Bais Mikdash, where they only started at the night of Chol HaMoed. Then in the next couple of installments, it continues with the Rebbe talking about how is it and why is it that we have Simchas Beis Hasheva now. Okay, continuing on Halachas of Shabbos. So we talked about how a person has to make sure to prepare nice food for Shabbos. So even a poor yid has to make an effort to make an oneg Shabbos and then save and scrimp during the rest of the week so he has money for Shabbos. If not, he should even borrow on a mashkin for tzorech Shabbos. This is the Chazal have the expression bonai levua laivani pareh, borrow on my behalf, and Hashem says I'll pay it back. And we know that all of a person's mezonis, all of a person's parnosa is set up from Rosh Hashanah, except for, among other things, expenses for Shabbos and Yom Tov, if he adds the Meisif in life. If a person that was very, very desperate, that's when Chazal say, "Asay Shabbat Chachil v'al Tzarech Habris." Better make your Shabbos a weekday rather than relying on other people for Tzarech. Still, at least a person should try, even in such condition, to make something, a little something extra for Shabbos, a little fish or something. And then another din in that connection, if they send you something to eat on Shabbos, then eat it dafka on Shabbos. It would be that the Rebbe adds midas hasidus, not to eat it, not to leave it over for a weekday, but rather to have to have it on Shabbos.